And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the 9 till noon show at 4 minutes past 9. It is the 7th of June and it is a Friday, which means we have our Friday panel back joining us again after a break for a couple of weeks as we did our election debates. And actually, before I introduce the panel, I might just give you a reminder of our election coverage over the weekend. Tomorrow, we're going to be on air at the same time as today, actually, 9 o'clock. We're going to be setting the scene for you from the Aura as boxes are open, ballot papers are sorted. We're going to bring you comprehensive tallies from all electoral areas as they come in. We have a panel on air from noon with expert analysis, as always, and lots to talk about. As the day goes on, we'll be in and out of the radio with latest tally news. We'll stay on air as much as is required for importance and what have you. On Sunday then, our teams are in the John Bosco Centre, the Aura, the Finn Valley Centre, Carn Community School and Highlands Hotel as counting begins. We will be around the county between 9 and 10am setting the scene for the day and also predicting what may unfold, recapping tallies and what have you. Another panel joins us at 12 noon as the picture begins to take shape, and we'll be on air bringing all the news and interviews from across the county for the rest of the day. We are, of course, live here on Highland Radio, but you can also watch everything unfold from across our posts, the five posts across the county. We're on YouTube and across Facebook and X, and if you want to watch on your smart TV or Fire Stick, then YouTube is the best option. And you can also follow the hashtag Highland LE24 for updates from all the count centres. So we're looking forward to that. And just some interesting information, just a bit of clarity on numbers. And it's an update on figures I talked about a little earlier in the week. 6,100 people have been added to the register who are now eligible to vote in the local elections since the referendum in March. Of the total, approximately 2,700 have been added in the Letterkenny County Milford electoral area. So that's just since March now. More people can vote in local elections than the referenda. So we're working through those figures to make sure it's an accurate representation of how things have increased since 2019, as it could be somewhat important. Right, our panel this morning are Emma Gover, the wee Donegal Mammy. Good morning to you, Emma.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good morning to all your listeners. I'm good, and thank you so much for joining us. Also with us this morning, Eamon McGee, a former inter-county footballer, Alan, and columnist. Good morning to you, Eamon.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Thank you so much for joining us. Really good, thanks. And Dr. Peter O'Rourke, former consultant orthopaedic surgeon. How are you, Peter?
Very well, Greg. Good morning.
Excellent stuff. I can hear you all. That's fantastic. So a broadcast moratorium is in place on media across the county ahead of the local European and Limerick mayoral elections. That's across the country, of course. It's imposed from until 10 p.m. Tonight, effectively. Essentially, we in the radio or anyone on television or in broadcast media can't say anything about the election that could influence someone's vote one way or another. The same rules, of course, though, do not apply to newspapers, online outlets or social media. Just a brief one on this. Peter, do you, I think the commission is looking at this later in the year. Do you think it's an archaic rule that should be scrapped, or does it serve a purpose, I wonder?
I think it's rather silly. I don't think anything you hear today will change what you thought yesterday. So the idea that you could be influenced at the last minute, I suppose if some big scandal broke about a candidate, it might change your views. But apart from that, and with social media these days anyway, you're going to hear everything anyway.
Yeah, and I always felt that it's, the whole conversation ignored those on the islands, because recently, up until relatively recently, they would vote a day or two earlier than the mainland, so the moratorium never applied to them. They were less important, so it doesn't make a great deal of sense, does it?
Yep.
What do you think, Eamon?
I think it overstates the influence us four will have on an individual out there.
But it would help fill the hour, Eamon. It would help fill the hour.
Yes. Oh, 100%. I'd love to be listening and talking about the elections and whatnot. But no, I think it's silly. I think it's in an age of social media where news is just literally, you get it within seconds and you can debate what you want online. I just think it ties your hands in terms of we want media to be able to compete in this world, and it just ties your hands and takes away from it. So it's something they'll probably have to look at going forward.
Emma, I mean, you can blog away till you're blue in the face today, and I just sit here in my hands.
Exactly. No, I don't agree with it, and I've actually never agreed with it even before I started blogging, because we are in the age of social media, and there's already a lot of competition out there for news outlets and radios, and I think it's unfair. And also in agreement with Eamon and Dr. O'Rourke there, I don't think it makes much of a difference, because we are in the age of social media. I mean, TikTok's going to be flat out today. Everybody knows that. So is Facebook. And you know what? I think it's healthy and to have these sort of political debates. And I don't think that anything that's going to be said until 10 o'clock tonight is going to have much of an impact on what people are going to decide to do today. Because, you know, they're going to know tomorrow, yesterday, what they were going to do today. Mm. So I think it just shows that we're behind the times and we need to.
And I think one thing that particularly jumps out at me is there's quite a significant protest taking place outside the council offices today, which we can't broadcast really or talk about, because I was trying to say, could we cover that really within the confines of the moratorium, and given that certain parties are running candidates and what have you? Probably not. So again, it does feel a little bit.
What's the punishment, Greg? Just as a matter of interest now.
Slap on the bum, Eamon.
Right. You're not going to take the chance anyway.
Which is the other. I don't know. But, you know, obviously with Commissioner Mann, the sanctions could be quite severe against a radio station. I actually don't know. It's a good question, actually. I should know, but I don't. That's why I come out with my stupid response. Yeah, so we can't talk about that, but we can talk about turnout. So if you listen to the media today, they'll ring around all the count centres and it'll be slow. Okay, then there'll be uptick, and then it'll be slow and steady throughout it's the same at every election. I'm not sure anyone rings out around these count centres or not, polling booths. It would be nice to see a high turnout. You know, I think we can sort of maybe encourage people, if we want to, and it would be good to see a big turnout, because I think that gives us more of a mandate then to sort of, praise or complain going forward.
100%, and I think it's really, really important that people go out and, you know, vote and, you know, partake in that right, because you can't go down to the pub next weekend and give out about the system or give out about certain politicians if you haven't gone down to your ballot box and cast your vote. I think that we can get into a kind of comfort zone here where it just doesn't matter, be it whatever party, and be careful not to mention parties here. It doesn't matter who we vote for. The thing is the same. The system will remain the same, but you have to partake in the vote.
And also important to that, and to counter that, Eamon, if you don't mind, if you want the system to stay the same, you also have to vote. Because no one knows which group or organisation or individual is going to be more motivated to do so.
100%, and it's why I get frustrated, you know, just to follow up on that point, it's why I get frustrated that people shout for change and they want this to change and they want that to change and they want a new type of politician to come in, and yet they'll continually vote. And that's their right. You know, it frustrates me, but that's totally within their right, and they're allowed to do that, and they 100% should be getting out today.
Yeah, for sure. Peter O'Rourke, because, you know, the outcome of a referendum or whatever it might be, if you actually look at the figures, it often ends up being a very, very small percentage of the population that make really quite significant changes or prevent quite significant changes being made, you know. So I think it is important, isn't it, that as many people who have a vote exercise that vote today.
I agree with you. I think certain countries have an obligation to vote. I think is it Australia, New Zealand?
It's often quoted, yeah.
So you can get fined for not voting unless you have a good reason. But I mean, when you see the turnout of some elections, or for instance the referenda, where the turnout is so low, yet we have the Electoral Commission discussing the possibility of giving the 16-year-olds the vote, which I think is farcical. But it's people get very disinterested in it. And in some respects, having a long run-up to an election like this, you get a bit of voter or election fatigue, shall I say. You hear so much about it. I mean, you look at the papers and there's page after page of it. You see all the signs, etc. personally, I think a shorter run into an election would probably be a lot better for everybody. You wouldn't get the voter apathy to the same degree, I think, because you just get fed up hearing about it after a while.
But yeah, and actually, it is very important. You can see that what's happening in Britain at the moment. The election's announced, and almost immediately you have the party leaders on TV having the debates, and I suppose it does keep the momentum and emphasis going. Emma, again, you know, it's really important that people, we often forget, and it sounds like we're harking back to the old days, but it is true. You know, the right to vote was hard won, and it's really, really important.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. It was hard won. And that's something that I always say to people, and said, you know, men fought and died for our right to have a vote and to have a democracy in this country. And I've heard a number of people say to me this week that they won't be voting. They've gone away for the weekend, and then their exact words, they couldn't be bothered. And like Eamon said a minute ago, what I say to them is, you know, well, then you can't really complain in 2 weeks' time when things aren't going, or in 6 months' time when you say nothing's changed, or as you say, if everything's changed, you can't complain, because at the end of the day, you know, today is the chance to have your opinion and your voice heard, and regardless of whether you want things to stay the same or you want things to change, if you're going to vote for seasoned politicians who are trying to retain their seats, be they independents or parties, or first-time candidates, I would encourage each and every person who's listening today to exercise your right to vote.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
A member of the working group examining dog control measures has said Ireland should consider following other countries in banning the XL bully breed. Well, it's a type of dog, not a breed. The call for a ban on the dog breed comes after a woman died in a dog attack in County Limerick. The animal involved in that incident is understood to be an XL bully dog. And also, we learned this morning that a pit bull terrier has been shot dead by Gardaí after attacking residents in Cork. A man and a woman were taken to Cork University Hospital to be treated for injuries after the attack, which happened at around 20 past five yesterday evening. There are, you know, in excess of 400 dog attacks on humans every single year. So the question is, you know, should specific breeds be banned outright? I'll put that to you. And this is in no way, by the way, talking to that awful tragic incident over the last couple of days, but it has brought the topic to the fore again. What do you think, Emma Gover?
I think that, you know, there's 11 restricted dog breeds in Ireland, and there is supposed to be a cohort of rules that are followed, which is that they must be kept in public, they must be kept in a short leash and a strong leash, no bigger than 2 metres. They can't be walked by somebody under the age of 16. They have to be muzzled in public, and they have to have a collar as well, identifying the dog's name and the owner's name and address. But we can't legislate for what goes on in people's own homes. Do you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, you know, these dogs are on a restricted list for a reason. I am not anti-dog. We had dogs when we were younger. My sister has a dog. I am absolutely not anti-dog. But, you know, these dogs are very, very powerfully strong. They have a very strong bite force. They are capable of inflicting serious life-changing injuries and death, as we've seen. I mean, Alejandro Misson was only 9, and he was left with life-changing injuries when he was attacked in Enniscorthy in 2022. And I understand that the dog's owners have since been sentenced to jail for that, because they were not maybe abiding by the rules because the dog was running free. And then the tragic incident over the last couple of days, and then last night we've seen again that a dog had to be put down. I think people need to understand that the dogs are great for companionship. They are, and they're great to have, but they are also animals at the end of the day. And, you know, in Germany, you actually have to do a course and be certified to own certain types of dogs. And I think, you know, if they're not going to ban the dogs, then they would need to introduce something like that here, that, you know, the person would need to go through this course to prove that they can handle this dog. But at the end of the day, I don't really understand, you know, these are very powerful dogs, and I don't understand why somebody would need one, to be quite honestly, unless you're working in customs or in Garda Síochána, or in search and rescue, where we know a lot of German shepherds are used. I can't understand.
Well, these XL bully dogs are so overbred and interbred that they're actually quite sick animals. They would be of no use in that regard. In any case, I'll come back to you. Dr. O'Rourke, what do you think? Should these dogs be banned outright? You know, we can talk about restricted and fair play to Emma gave a very good assessment of the rules as they are. But I think we've all seen these dogs out without muzzles on, not on leads. The owners think they're the cutest thing ever. And we're not anti-dog ownership either. Of course, well, you can be. I'm not. I'm certainly not. But I mean, like, an all-out ban is really quite hard to misinterpret, Peter.
I agree with you. I think big dogs which are built or bred for hunting or fighting have no real place as domestic pets. I mean, any dog can cause problems. I mean, my own experience, we've always had dogs as a kid and growing up, but on two occasions we had to get rid of kids while I was living up here in Donegal. We had a golden retriever who one of my children as a two-year-old was sort of annoying the dog, and the dog had the two-year-old's head in its mouth, didn't do any damage, but we got rid of the dog straight away. We had a Great Dane who was as stupid as they come, but she nipped two of our friends, so we had to get rid of them. Fortunately, we were able to rehome them. They didn't have to be destroyed. But any dog can bite, and no matter what you do, you can't be certain that the dog's 100% safe. And an awful lot of dogs attack people because they're being protective of their owners. I mean, a dog's devotion to its owner is, you know, amazing to see. I mean, they just love their owner so much. But if they think their owner is at risk, they react in a protective manner.
But also, too, just in relation to that, Peter, and I referenced this year earlier, and I was listening to a former dog warden who said that on many occasions they'd called out to a house, say, for instance, the dog owner was under the influence of alcohol or something, and whatever way the dog didn't recognise that person as its owner in that moment actually attacked the owner. As well, so you can even if it is your pride and joy in your baby, you can never be certainly you can never be too careful, I'd imagine.
Yeah, they're protective instincts, and as you say, if they don't recognize you or it's dark or something like that, you could easily come to grief. But I mean, they do have a very strong nature that makes them protect their owners, but unfortunately, that can go wrong. And it doesn't have to be something like an XL bully. It can be any sort of dog. But if it's an XL bully or another type of bulldog, the damage they can do is catastrophic. Mm. I mean, a big dog can cause an awful lot of damage if they want to.
Yeah, and I'm not going to go into the details of the most recent attack, but it certainly underscores exactly what you're saying. And obviously, you know, we probably wouldn't have heard of that incident in Cork, I don't think, if there hadn't been that awful tragedy in the middle of the week. This happens all the time, and I'm sure some of your former colleagues, Peter, you know, dealing with serious dog bites, Emma referenced some of them, you know, plastic surgery or whatever it might take. You know, that's the 400-plus attacks annually that we'd be talking about.
Yeah, well, hunting dogs tend to go for the throat or the facial area. And I mean, we've seen incidents in both Britain and Ireland where children have been attacked, and the facial injuries are, you know, life changing. It's not something you can dismiss. I think we just have to be more careful. But I mean, I would agree with Emma that I don't understand why anybody would want to own an XL bully.
Okay, Emma McGee, what's your view?
100%, Greg. I think, you know, I'm a dog owner, but I've also seen the other side of it where my uncle would have owned sheep down about Gidore, and I've seen the irresponsibilities of, you know, people that just couldn't be bothered looking after their dogs and the consequences of that. So you add in that their attitude into a dog breed like the XL and the way that they're designed or bred to inflict that damage, and the attacks with them, they're disproportionate to every other dog breed, and I think, you know, it's you hear this nonsense, it's not the dog, it's the owner. Now if you've seen videos of the owner and the dog, and like from the most recent attack, they clearly had a good relationship, and it's just that nature is still within animals. So for this type, and again, I'd be very much pro dog now, and you know, I love the family pets, but for this type of breed, and then again, like, it leads into a debate where we have a dog fouling issue in Letterkenny, and if we can't get people to even bother cleaning up after their dog, how can we expect them to have the responsibility to look after a potentially dangerous dog like an XL. So without a doubt, in my opinion, that they should be banned.
And I can imagine, you know, dog owners, responsible dog owners, who are, I think, the majority, listen to this and they think, oh, here we go again. You know, this is effectively people having to go with us again. They feel like they can't walk the dog in the park. They can't walk the dog on the beach. You know, they think that everyone thinks their dog's just about to go off and chase livestock or what have you. I mean, that's not what we're talking about here. But, you know, is there an argument for something aiming similar to what Emma mentioned in Germany, whereby there is a course before you own a dog? Or some sort of something
I think in an ideal world that's something that we could look at, but we don't live in an ideal world, and I think, you know, just the to be a realist about it, I don't think, and then it says goes back to that point about my uncle and the sheep and the dogs, that, you know, the people just don't bother, and the dog file issue, if minor issues, if they can't look after them out there, then I just don't see them making the effort to go and take a course, which I'd imagine would be comprehensive. It's not a matter of going in and ticking a box. So
yeah, it is. I think it is a little bit like littering. You know, like the same people seem to dump rubbish all the time. You know, we all travel the roads, and the takeaway stuff is dumped in the same place every single time. And it doesn't seem to matter what you bring in, what you say, how much you appeal. There are going to be some people that will always act in a certain way. And maybe that extends to those who are, you know, not responsible dog owners, Eamon.
And I think it's a mentality, definitely, 100% back that up. I think we can put all the things in place to help, you know, help them become dog owners, but it's just not. I just think having something like an XL breed, walking about in a state where there's kids, or walking about you know, a large town or whatever, it just doesn't sit well with me, and I just don't think you can put on all the courses you want. I'd just rather them banned, to be honest with you.
A number of people have texted in saying no such thing as a bad dog, just a bad owner. Eamon preempted that, poo-pooed all over it. Peter O'Rourke, no such thing as a bad dog, just a bad owner.
Not as simple as that.
Pure nonsense, Greg.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That's like the American attitude.
Sorry, go ahead,
People don't kill people, guns do. It's the same argument.
Yeah, it's actually not a bad analogy there. Yeah, okay. Emma, no such thing as a bad dog, just bad owners?
I think that's a very simplistic way to look at it. I think, you know, I know people very much like the story that Dr. O'Rourke shared, where they may have had a dog for years and never had a problem with the dog, and then all of a sudden the dog turned on one of the children or turned on them. And they don't know a reason for it. They can't find a reason. And they've had a very good relationship with their dog. Very good, responsible dog owners. I think now, don't get me wrong, I would actually agree with Eamon there. There are some people out there that, and maybe they don't realise the responsibility of a dog, and then they get the dog. And
well, we see that every Christmas, really. You know, it's become almost like a cliche at Christmas. A dog's not just for Christmas. But
yeah,
still in January, we see a massive increase in dogs being surrendered.
I didn't put it to you, Peter.
Do you think there should be, you know, a test or a course that must be passed before you own a dog, or are you of the view that of Eamon that wouldn't make much difference? Paraphrasing what Eamon said, or it'd be complicated. It's not. It'd be fine in an ideal world, but we don't live in an ideal world.
Well, we don't live in an ideal world. I mean, you could apply the same logic to a lot of different things. I think there's the recent thing about not selling cigarettes to under 16-year-olds or under 18-year-olds. I mean, you'll get the big brother state attitude to that. I mean, there are so many things that you could apply similar logic to. I mean, you don't need a license to cycle a bike on a road, but you need a license to drive a car and do a test or drive a motorcycle. So apparently for a scooter, which you can do on the road, and a bike, you don't need a license. So trying to suggest you need a license to own a dog is probably a bigger stretch.
You don't even need to wear a helmet to cycle a bike on the road. which is, I think, is a bit crazy. Just a word on the Leaving Cert, the state exams. It's day three, I think, for at least the Leaving Certs and probably the Junior Certs as well. Emma, your memory of state exams, if you did them, not asking you if you did not, not sure if that's a personal question or not, but I mean, obviously it's the most important day in the world probably for a lot of young people. I think as you get older, you realise there's things that are more important. But what's your view?
My view?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I don't want to say it was that long ago since I did mine, but...
don't be stealing Peter's lines now.
But do you know what? There has been change. Do you know what? It was stressful. But I probably, looking at my own children doing them now, I don't think we were as stressed doing them as they are now. And maybe that's the influence of social media. I don't know. I blame social media for everything and I use it a lot. But do you know what? I don't think I was maybe as stressed. I'm not sure if that's a good insight into me, but looking at my own kids doing it.
But did you feel that you kind of really had to decide what you wanted to do, what direction your life was taking?
You know what? I think we had a much more, you know, we knew our path and that was it and that's what we were doing. And almost actually, well, I did anyway, and I know my siblings did, from even when we went into secondary school, maybe in second year, we knew what we needed to get in our junior shirts.
Yeah, so there was a clarity there.
You know,
yeah.
Whereas now, I think there's a lot of, you know, there's so many different avenues that they can take, which is great. But at the same time, is that kind of a distraction for them too? I don't really know. But like looking at one of my children is absolutely adamant about what they want to do. And then I have another child and it's like I'm doing transition year just to figure out what it is that I want to do.
Didn't work with either of my two older ones anyway. But yeah, it just turned out to be incredibly expensive. Eamon, would you like to be back sitting a Leaving Cert again?
Yeah. I think I'd like to be back. I don't think the Leaving Cert. I'd like to make a few different decisions now at that stage in my life. I still have dreams. I still have them dreams about studying for the Leaving. I'm not as old as you, Greg, now where it might have passed. But
I actually have nothing to say to that. You're right.
You can't deny it.
Fair cop, you know.
No, in terms of the Leaving Cert, I think it's, there's a debate about the type of education we're getting, and it's a debate on how we judge that education after the five to six years. And what we're effectively doing is, you know, over 5 or 6 years, we put what you've done in the space of 10, 12 days. And I don't think that's fair. It's not as bad as what some people make out to be, but I think it's just a tough situation for a kid who's been told, this is your future, you know, this next 10, 12 dictates. And we all know we're in a position to know that, and that's just not simply the case. It's just a road you travel. And I just think that it's just not fair in young people. To be putting them in that situation.
And it's a tough time. It's a tough time for parents and guardians right now as well, because, you know, we all want what is best for our younger people. But if they're doing the Leaving Cert now and they're talking about going to college and all, you know, a lot of people don't have the money spare for the young people to go on to third level. It's a big stress for, you know, 40, 50, 60-year-old parents and guardians or 30-year-old dependent, you know, facing up to that. Now, you want to fulfill your children's dreams, but for some it's just not achievable.
100%. And what they're effectively being told is this is your future and this will dictate your life. And then the path to that then ends up in Dublin. And then for some parents, Dublin is just a no-go area in terms of the costs and the rental and whatnot. And we put so much stock into it. And I just think it leads into that wider debate about what we see as an educated child. And do we just completely put it down to the book smart?
And are we actually making sure that we realise the potential of every student with this specific form? Now, I know there are LCAs and stuff, but, you know, are we? Yeah. Okay.
The messaging for them 5-6 years is you're smart if you can, you know, bang out a maths equation. Yeah. And that's the only way we see smart. And if you do well in this Leaving Cert, you're very, very smart. And there's so much more to life, so much more to, you know, so much more layers to life than just through that book. And I'm not saying like there's a lot of people that do well in books, and that's a gift that they have. But there's a lot of people that just not for them either.
No, I just couldn't do it. Peter O'Rourke.
I'm going to be the grumpy old man, I suspect.
Well, I might join you, actually. I've held me powder. Come on.
I think there's a couple of different ways of looking at this. Education has become easier, and the exams have become relatively easier. I mean, what we went through COVID, when everybody who's getting a C is now getting an A, I mean, was absolutely ridiculous. The other thing is, the only thing that matters in regard to getting a good Leaving Cert is if you want to go to university and want to continue studying. But even the universities are turned into a bit of a joke. There are probably less than 70% of the degrees actually lead to employment or lead to anything other than I've spent 3 years in college, and I think that's very wrong.
That's an interesting point, because I've asked people, you know, 2 years into a 3-year course, or even on year three of a 3-year course, you know, what are you going to do when you leave university? And it's the same question you would get if you were asking them the week before the Leaving Cert, actually, which I was like, okay, in my ignorance, I thought, well, I would have thought this is a means to an end. But it's just quite interesting you picked up on that, Peter.
Well, there are so many degrees that are just a case of going to college rather than planning a career or a future or a job in the future. But I think in regard to the Leaving Cert and the Junior Cert, I think it is a good thing to have some pressure in your life, even at that age, because kids these days are so used to having mommy and daddy on the end of a phone and taking responsibility and asking mommy and daddy, what am I going to do for every decision? And we certainly didn't have that in my generation. I remember finishing the Leaving Cert and going over to England to work in a factory. And I think I phoned home twice. The second time was to get my Leaving Cert results. And that's what you did. Nowadays, you'd have the daily phone call from your children. They need to sort of learn that life has stresses. And if you learn to deal with things at a younger age, it's probably better for you, because otherwise everything in life becomes a stress. I think the Leaving Cert has its faults, but it's not a bad system. Mm. The one thing I think we could change is having more sort of vocational training for people who are not planning university educations. I mean, I spent a fair bit of time in Austria, and basically at about 14, I think it is, you go into either an academic line going to university. You can go into one where you are planning to go into music or the arts. You can go to one where you go into a trade school, or even they do hotel management and that sort of stuff. So your last 4 years at school direct you to one of those. Now, it's a bit hard at 14 making a decision that affects your entire life, but I think we could look at systems like that, so that someone who has no intention going to university but would love to be a mechanic, a carpenter, an electrician, a plumber, can actually start training for that at school rather than sort of having to look for an apprenticeship when they leave school, when it's much harder.
It is interesting, Eamon, the point, and I'll bring sport into this if you don't mind. It is interesting the point Peter made there just about, you know, maybe understanding that life is not all rosy. And it brought to mind, you know, football nowadays, if young ones are playing football nowadays, I'm not sure up to what age it is, under 10 or under 12, but scores aren't kept. I'm not sure if that was always the case. I've just got this image of you as like 5'9", 7-year-old, walking off the pitch effing and blinding because he conceded a late penalty, or something.
That was more or less me now.
Yeah, I just could see it right now. We are, I suppose we have changed things whereby we try, you know, and not have competition, or not really allow our children to understand what winning and losing is. Are we too, maybe we are overprotective.
We are. And I think, you know, it's part of the argument with the Leaving Cert, but for me, it's more a case of the Leaving Cert is just, you know, we put so much stock in it. But that argument about putting, you know, rewarding everybody the medal for the participation medal that everybody, and we're nearly afraid to upset people and tell them that they failed, which is a highly dangerous message to be given any young person.
Because I think there's a more positive way to be inclusive. I can understand why that might be there, but I think we can be, you know, sort of inclusive and bring out the best in people in different ways rather than just saying everyone fair play to you all.
And I think it leads into a case that we're afraid to upset people, where there's a word going about, being bandied about, that this next generation, and I don't know, do I fully buy into it, but there is a cohort that just lack that resilience. And that's the... That is the case of being told, you know, you're doing well, you're a winner, and, you know, A for effort. And sometimes it just needs to be called out. There's no harm in called out and saying to you, Greg, and saying you're doing a bad job. You know, if it was a case where people were telling you that, oh, it's a brilliant job and the radio has been very, very poor, you're not going to learn.
Okay, I'm not being oversensitive, but I'm really old now and potentially bad at my job, Eamon. That's from you.
You're not at all.
All right, Emma.
Come back in there.
No, I'm only joking. I want you to, Emma. Come back in. I'm joking, Eamon. I know that.
Come back in there and say, I actually totally agree with what Eamon's saying there, and I agree with elements of what Dr. O'Rourke is saying there, and that, you know, I think actually in a way, and I'm saying this as a parent, that we're doing our young people a disservice by not letting them build up their own resilience. And I actually think that's why we have more mental health problems in young people now than we have ever had before.
But just on that point, if you don't mind, Emma, I actually find myself, or I'm better at now, when the older boys were younger, second-guessing discipline in them. Because I've been convinced, or in my back of my mind, was what if they go into their bedroom, you know? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, absolutely. And I always say to my kids, because my husband, he's working abroad, and I always say to them this way, you know, this isn't a sorority house, okay? Mm. I'm your parent. I say you do. And, you know, there is an element of kids coming up now, especially teenagers, thinking that you're there to be their buddy. And as I always say to them, listen, look, I always want to be your friend, but I have to be your mother first and your parent first. And if that kind of annoys you now and you're angry now, in 10 years' time, you won't be angry. But what I wanted to say was, in regards to the Leaving Cert, it has changed quite a bit in the sense that we now have the Leaving Cert applied and we have the LCVP. And we have to recognise that there are students out there. I mean, I have a child with ASD, high-functioning ASD, which is quite far into the spectrum. She's sitting her junior cert at the moment. But we have to understand that there are people that learn in different ways. But I myself, you know, I just want to say for any parents out there listening who are panicking, because I have a child sitting exams myself, you know, there are different pathways. This will not be the end of the world if they don't do well. The idea is that we have to tell them that even if they didn't do well or they didn't get with it, there are still other pathways. For example, I didn't do my Leaving Cert. I had to do school when I was 17 to become a full-time carer for my father. And a year later, I had my first child. So I was a very young parent. And I was a full-time carer to my father, who was quite unwell at the time. And then I took over being a full-time carer for my mother as well. And later on, I went back in my late 20s. I had 3 children at that stage, and I went back to education. I then had my fourth child. I retrained as an emergency medical technician. I couldn't go out to work full time because I have a daughter who's in full time care, as you know, Greg. We've discussed her many times. But now I will go back part time to university in September, and I'll be studying Irish government and politics. So what I'm trying to say is, you know, for any parents out there who are saying, you know, if they don't get the results that they need in August, I mean, I have made many connections, and I know politicians are sick listening to me. They're probably going to blacklist my number at this stage. But what I'm trying to say is this is not, you know, this is not the be-all and end-all.
And I think it's very important
to tell them there are other paths.
Yeah, and I think it's important, too, that parents don't beat themselves up as well, you know.
Absolutely. And it's important to say, you know, there are other paths, and it's important to say to that person, if they come into you and say, let's say, they didn't get the points they wanted, it's important that they know that we don't turn around then and say, right, that's it, it's done now. We turn around and say, okay, what about an access course? What about this? What about that?
Yeah.
And we just, but I totally agree with what Eamon's saying there and Dr. O'Rourke in the sense that I think that we're doing them a disservice by coddling them too much.
For sure, but at the same time, too, I'm a big fan of every student maximising their own potential and
Absolutely.
Not necessarily the potential I don't do and haven't done for some time now. And fair play to the student that aces absolutely everything.
Absolutely.
But I think I'll mention it and it's no problem, but the days of sort of doing interviews and all that kind of stuff, whereby then it makes other people feel even worse, fantastic. But I think it's about each individual doing absolutely the best.
My own daughter started with the National Learning Network to achieve her Leaving Cert because she's quite physically disabled. She had to cocoon during COVID. She has a very poor prognosis. She's very physically disabled, but she wants her Leaving Cert.
Yeah.
Or she wants, and you know, so instead of saying to her, no, you can't do that because you're quite physically disabled and you need full-time care. And you know, what we said was, right, how can we help her achieve what she wants?
I get you.
So then get her into the NLN. So what I'm trying to say is there is a pathway for everybody. It may not
for
be
sure.
the traditional pathway. But there is a pathway for everybody. We just, as parents and as guardians, we've just got to help them find it. And it's not easy, but I take my hat off to all parents. And I would just say, go easy on yourselves as well, because
exactly.
it's not
That's
an easy
it.
Time for you either.
Okay. Now, just to recap the figures, as it relates to the electorate, which means those who are on the register and entitled to vote. In 2019, the total was 132,381. Today, for these local elections, the figure is 142,419. So bar the shouting, it is up pretty much close to exactly 10,000 people over the last 5 years. And it's an increase on the referenda total of 123 from 142,718. But then again, it's up more. Less people are entitled to vote in the referenda than they are in the local elections. So there you go. That might be indicative to somebody out there. Slow and steady is what I'm being told it is. I haven't really been told that, but I know that's what it is. There's so much focus on getting good points for college or uni, but we're losing trades, so it's hard to get a plumber, electrician or a joiner, etc. But in fairness, there has been, I think, good inroads made recently in terms of platforming those types of career choices alongside sort of the third level. A caller says you're actually required to have a license for your dog, but that's just money making. That's not, that doesn't really talk to whether someone should be able to have one or not. And Buncrana is a mess with dog fouling, Swans Park, and especially the walk out to Ned's Point. Dog fouling's it's an ever for present problem, isn't it, Emma? Unfortunately, and it is only a minority that are responsible, and give all good dog owners a bad name.
Yeah, we hear a lot about this, especially as somebody who is a parent of somebody who uses a wheelchair. It's really inconsiderate. Mm. You know, at the end of the day, I my mother had a guide dog for years, and they were taught how to clean up after their guide dogs when they have them out. And I don't mean to be offensive. I know there are good dog owners out there, but at the end of the day, if a person who is registered blind or visually impaired can clean up after their dog, then everybody should be able to clean up after their dog, and there's no excuse for it.
A caller says about exams, children are getting too soft nowadays and we're changing their paths more and more to make it easier for them, which is making them even softer. Teenagers will cry now if they can't make up their mind what cereal they want in the morning. I would have been scolded and told to wise up, but nowadays they rub their back and play into it. Based on this, the exams will end up being changed to continuous assessment to again make it easier for them and again making them softer and softer. Peter, what do you think to that comment?
I agree with that totally. I mean, the typical example of it is the junior cert. I did the inter cert. And, you know, if you got an A, you thought you were a genius. Now, you know, they're going out after the junior cert now with 10 A's and they think they're geniuses. And then they do the Leaving Cert and they basically scrape a pass. I mean, if you make it easy, you dumb it down. People have false expectations and it's just going to lead to tears.
Actually, it's not even, you don't get A's or B's or C's anymore. Now you get distinction, higher merit and achieved is what you get now.
Okay. Yeah, I think, Eamon, in lots of things that I think in lots of decisions that have been made or are being made, that we have a great responsibility to make sure that we are making the right decisions for all of our children, I think, Eamon. Sometimes I think, you know, we don't think it through fully. And we have a great responsibility, I think, because we all know how influential our teenage and school years are on the rest of our lives. I think we as adults, or those that maybe have decision-making powers at the moment, need to make sure what we are doing is actually good for kids.
And I think there's a thing there that the easiest path is the one with the least resistance. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the right path. And sometimes we can be tempted to go towards it. And I get that, you know, from a parenting perspective, and I'm sure you've all experienced this, where, you know, a fiver for the week, and that was it. You got that. And nowadays, you're nearly afraid to say no to the young kid, because you don't want them. They shouldn't have to do without like you used to. I'm not saying we were like deprived or anything.
I know exactly what you're saying, though. Yeah,
we had to make sure that fiver stretched, because we just weren't getting another one. And I think we can get into that temptation of trying to make things too easier, and there's no harm teaching them that you have the fiver, it's got to do you for the week. And that leads into the societal thing where we can make possibly things too easy for young kids.
Okay. Eamon McGee.
I'm raging to find out you got a fiver, Eamon. We only got £2.
I'll tell you what I got, what I got rattled. That's all I'll say. Eamon McGee, former intercounty footballer, columnist, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Cheers, Greg.
Take care. Bye-bye. Emma, always lovely to have you on the show. Take care of yourself.
Thanks so much, Greg.
Emma, go over there. And Dr. Peter O'Rourke, former consultant, orthopaedic surgeon. Peter, bye-bye.